I just wanted to start on the Russia-Ukraine situation this morning because I saw a couple of articles and headlines. I kind of wanted to bounce off you and get your reaction. First off, you've documented, explained many, many times the precarious situation the Ukrainians are in relative to the strength of Russia's military. Ukraine's running out of soldiers, warm bodies. They're short on equipment. They're begging the world for assistance and help and yada, yada, yada. I saw this article, and while the article does acknowledge, you know, it's like the fog of war, the numbers are a bit fuzzy, but a lot of Ukrainian soldiers are deserting. And the one article I read was Ukrainian prosecutors handling more than 300,000 desertion cases. The number of people deserting and the number of people deserting within any given time frame, regardless of the overall number, is pretty substantial. This is a part of the problem they're facing that I wasn't even aware of. I get the concept of desertion, but if you can't get your own citizens to fight against the Russians, I mean, this is just another domino falling for Ukraine. Do you think these figures are accurate? Is that kind of your understanding of what's on the front lines in the battle?
They are accurate, and I can tell you I have firsthand knowledge from a former cabinet official in the first couple of years of the Zelensky administration out of Kiev, and they said that the situation is generally worse than what's being reported because they try to put a cap on all the bad news. You have a combination of several things working together that are fatal to the Ukraine side. Number one is the desertions you mentioned, like that. I think that they're working 300,000. They've had 161,000 between January 1st and October 31st. I don't know what the numbers are for the month of November, but it was 161,000 then. At the same time, you had approximately 200,000 men of between the ages of 18 and 22 flee the country. They left. You have somewhere around 17,000 forced mobilizations per month that they bring in. And then there's it's still a state secret, but some huge number of casualties per month. And when you see the number of men that are forced mobilized, then come up and get wounded of those that fight, then the number that flee because of they left the country and the desertions, you see that they are literally physically shrinking by a substantial portion every month while the Russian side continues to grow every month because they recruit, not force mobilize, but recruit more people than they lose through all means every single month. So while they're getting bigger and stronger, the Ukraine side is shrinking, and it's just a mathematical certainty that at some point, math will take its effect and you will see a collapse somewhere of the front. We're starting to see early signs of that in multiple places along the front line. Vladimir Putin had a press conference last night where he announced several cities headed forward, et cetera.
Pokrovsk was one that he claimed to be captured. They say the Russian proclaims final victory over key city Pokrovsk on eve of Putin-Witkoff peace plan meeting. Now, timing is everything. So they're going in with what arguably is yet another feather in their cap on the front lines to negotiate a resolution, which of course is going to require some land concessions, which sounds like the land concessions are going to be growing.
Well, here's the issue. Number one, there's no question that Russia announced that on the eve of Witkoff's meeting intentionally. The fact is they basically already had it almost 10 days ago. There was just a few outlying neighborhoods that they had to clear. And I guess they were waiting on this. I don't know. But I was wondering why they haven't announced it, because they have had effective control over it for nearly 2 weeks now. So that was Pokrovsk. Now that there are about 2,000 additional Ukrainian troops that are physically surrounded in the sister city, Mirnograd, there are now no more possibility of them escaping. In the Zaporizhia area, there is another settlement that on the way to the city of Zaporizhia, now putting that at risk. There is Krasny Liman has been seeing Russian advances. And then one of the biggest ones is up in the Kharkiv area, in a place called Vovchansk, has now also been completely captured by the Russians. And then one of the most important things Putin said that we didn't know yesterday was that they now have plans to capture the province not Pokrovsk, sorry, that's the city, Dnipro. They now are going to add another oblast that they're going to conquer and clear. That's news, and I'm sure that's going to have a big effect when Witkoff gets to town. But the bottom line for Russia is y'all, I don't know why y'all are talking about security guarantees and coalition of the willing and stuff. He goes, because there's nothing you can do that's going to stop us from taking what we want on the battlefield. So you either have a negotiated settlement on the terms we're willing to contemplate today, or we will continue to go in at least up to the Dnieper River. And I don't see anything that can stop the western side.
And these regions you're referring to, either captured or maybe will be captured up to the Dnieper River, are they Russian dominated? In other words, early on we talked about Crimea. Crimea was logical for Russia to want. It was built, made of primarily Russian sympathized leading individuals that just happen to be in the Ukraine border. I understand conceptually that. Are we starting to see the Russians get into areas that are devoutly, shall I say, patriotically Ukrainian?
No, they're not even close to that yet. Really, when you look at demographically, everything up to the Dnieper River is primarily ethnic Russian, and a pretty substantial portion of it. The further west you go from the Dnieper River, then the percentages drop off precipitously, and then it becomes, you know, further to the west, it's, you know, violently anti-Russian in the Ukraine going forward. But you're talking about the cities of Kharkiv and Odessa, which are the two jewels that are still in Ukraine control. Those are heavily Russian population, and of course they claim historically they're theirs, et cetera. But now then you see that they're moving towards that one in the Kharkiv in the north, because now they're into what's called the operational space of the Kharkiv Oblast, leading right to the city. And then because of these shots that the West has been doing through Ukraine to take out their two of their big tankers in the so-called Shadow Fleet, many in Russia are now saying, all right, that's the last straw. Now then, the only way we can stop that is to take Odessa. And so this may open up a new path to where now they're going to go beyond the Dnieper River in the south, even all the way to Dnieper eventually. I don't know how long it might take, but that seems to be in the crosshairs now.
Well, maybe the delay in negotiating a peace resolution is they want to capture all of the regions that they can claim are made up of these sort of Russian loyalist people.
And look, let's just be blunt here.
Please.
Take the emotions out of it for a moment. Militarily, it makes a lot of sense for the Russians to say, hey, why do I want to worry about dinking about 28 points or 19 points and give you this? You know, I'll take that. You can take this thing over here. When they can say, we'll just keep going like we are with the status quo until we don't have to negotiate anything. We'll simply take by force of arms what we want. The cost will be high, but they have the cost. They have the resources to pay that, both in blood, treasure, and ammunition. They can do it. And so from that perspective, because Russia's thinking long term, they're not thinking just get to the end of the year or just get to the end of this war. They're thinking established security, you know, going forward for decades, et cetera. And for them to pay that price is not that high, because the payoff for their country, as they see it, is high. That's the problem that I don't think we've come to grips with yet at the negotiating table.
Well, and I'm sure that they're really looking forward to so they can call something a win in the win column after so many. I mean, the Soviet Union fell. They lost a lot of regions and provinces. Things moved western. So I think they're in it for a moral victory as well as the land acquisition victory on top of everything. It would serve as the least incentive for the patriotic Russians to want to continue to fight this fight, unlike the Ukrainians who are apparently fleeing the battlefield.
Yeah, and Brian, it's stronger than that, because it's not just a moral victory against Ukraine. It is a massive victory against NATO, and that's how they would see it, because NATO has done everything in their power, 50 nations, all the stuff that we've given, everything that we've tried with training, with weapons, ammunition, the intelligence support, targeting support, long range. If all of that fails, it won't just be a paper victory. It will be a pretty substantial victory that many around the world will observe and go, holy smokes, everything NATO tried to do failed. So it is a big deal. And one of the reasons why I think that we should say, let's don't get to that point. Let's have an ugly negotiated deal now so that we can prevent them from getting all that kind of a victory, at least a full one, because otherwise it'll just look like we could do nothing and we could not stop the Russians all the way up to the border.
Take your wins where you can get them, apparently. One more thing I have to ask, moving forward in the aftermath of whatever this war leads to, whatever solution, negotiated or not, the breadbasket of the region, Ukraine, talked about the fields, the grain, the abundance of all these resources. Who in the hell is going to be there to farm the land, Daniel Davis?
Yeah, You know, there's plenty of people that'll farm it because it'll just be under the Russian control, but the people themselves will still farm it. The bigger problem, though, Brian, is that the amount of ordnance that had been expended there and bombs and unexploded ordnance, bomb fragments, etc., is so massive. It's going to take, I bet, more than a decade, probably a lot more than a decade, to get all that taken out. And you're talking mines as well. So a lot of that, some of the best, most fertile territory is sowed with mines and unexploded bomb fragments, etc. And you got to get all that stuff cleared out before you can even start to working, and no matter who controls it. So that's something that's going to be negatively affected for a long, long time to come.
It sure is, but given the gravity of that problem, I would like to think some, international body of folks, maybe like the baby blue hats, could go in and start solving that problem on behalf of humanity, given all the unexploded ordnance.
Yeah, I mean, we still have people doing demining operations in Vietnam, so there's no
Vietnam.
question that a lot of people want to do that, but we've got to have a security environment to allow it. That's the problem.
Daniel Davis, retired Lieutenant Colonel. Find him where you get your podcast, Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Find him every week here at 8:30, beginning on Tuesdays here on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Very informative, very enlightening. I like, yes, telling it like it is. You don't sugarcoat anything, Daniel. We all need a healthy dose of that, man, to really come to grips with what's going on.
But we got to have a healthy dose of that so that we can get to something that actually can sustain and be good for the outcome. If you don't do that, then you're going to be left with whatever's left over.
Stop the death. That's your and my goal, I think, in the long run. Daniel
Amen.
Davis.